from WBUR Boston and NPR. I'm Tom Asbrook, and this is On Point. For decades, the U.S. has set the standard of excellence for women's soccer. They've won 3 consecutive Olympic gold medals. Their FIFA ranking has never dipped below number 2. They've won 2 World Cup titles, but none since 1999. They are back in the World Cup competition in Canada right now, eager to claim another. It's been a less than perfect start, a little rough, a 3-1 victory over Australia, a scoreless draw against Sweden. They've got talent and legacy. Can they do it? This hour on Point, American women, American soccer, and the quest for another World Cup championship. You can join us on air or online, where this conversation is always on. Do they have the right stuff, the style, the strategy, the support to win it? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Friday night's World Cup game between the U.S. and Sweden, close match, ended in a draw, 0-0 in the 77th minute. Sweden played a corner kick. U.S. defender Megan Klingenberg, 5'2" tall, came up with a goal line save, header, jump going very high to get it. The ball came so close to crossing the goal line that officials used goal line technology to determine if it was in.
Klingenberg on the back post here. She heads it off the bar, and this is fundamental brilliance when you do your job as well as she just did her job.
They're saying no goal for Sweden, and the commentator there saying fundamental brilliance with that header. Still 0-0 with us first today from Vancouver, Canada, where tomorrow the U.S. will take on Nigeria, is Lakin Littman, reporter for USA Today Sports. Lakin Littman, welcome to On Point. Thank you very much for being with us.
Hi, Tom. Thank you so much for having me.
How are people assessing the performance of the U.S. women's team after 2 games now in the World Cup competition?
Well, I think the general public is a little confused. You know, they think the U.S. should be dominating pretty much any opponent. But the U.S., you know, the team is pretty confident. They're pretty calm. I wouldn't say satisfied, but they were fine with the tie against Sweden. You know, they don't want their players. It's a long tournament. So they were explaining that, you know, they don't want their players to get injured in just the second game of the tournament. You know, they kind of wanted to hold back a little bit, and they were fine with the tie because, you know, at this point, it's all a numbers game. The points are fine. They're still leading the group, and if they can beat Nigeria tomorrow, then, you know, they win the group and they go on to the round of 16 and get an opponent that they should not struggle with at all.
They have to win enough to come out of this group. It's been called the Group of Death, Group D, which is the U.S., Sweden, Australia, and Nigeria. At this point, are they guaranteed to go on? What do they have to do with Nigeria to get there, or is it one of these 16 moving pieces to determine it?
Well, I think they got lucky in that as far as the Group of Death goes, Nigeria definitely had their best game in their first game against Sweden when they tied 3-3. They looked fast. They looked the best that they didn't look as good as they did in their second game against Australia, that's for sure. And I don't think that the U.S. will have a problem with them. They should win, you know, if they play like they can, 3-4-0, should have an easy time and move on and win the group.
Here's from the U.S. team talking with Fox Sports on Sunday. This was the forward, Amy Rodriguez, saying that the U.S. team likes the amount of pressure of being in the Group of Death and what that's made them face.
We want this pressure early on because this is a World Cup. Every game we're going to face is going to be tough. And to be in the Group of Death right now, I think that's a good thing. I think we're getting used to these strong games, hard games, and I'm hoping that we can come out on top. This is a huge group to come out of.
Lakin Littman with USA Today Sports, describe these first 2 games for us. What did you see in the style of play, in their readiness, as the U.S. first faced off against Australia?
In the first game, they definitely seemed a little bit nervous, which team captain Carly Lloyd called before the World Cup even started. She thought, you know, with the amount of inexperienced players they have starting within their first World Cup, you know, they might come out with some jitters. They seem pretty disorganized, especially in the midfield and trying to connect passes and control the game, and that definitely showed. It didn't really seem like until maybe the last 20 minutes of the game that they really maybe tried to dominate Australia. They ended up obviously winning 3-1, but, you know, none of their forwards scored. It was two players in the midfield. Megan Rapinoe had two goals. Kristen Press had one goal. They need to get the ball forward more. They need to get the ball out wide, and they scored most of their goals off crosses. Megan Rapinoe had a beautiful, her second goal was, she took it herself. No one pressured her, and she just took it on her own and scored a beautiful goal. I would say in the second game, it was a little bit better as far as control goes and keeping possession, but it's kind of interesting. You know, usually the U.S. just dominates and just keeps the ball the entire game. But Sweden, for most of the game, they actually had controlled, as far as, I guess, the FIFA official stats said, that they had the ball the majority of the game. So it was kind of interesting. It was kind of even, I guess, more in Sweden in that game. So.
I want to take it back to the first game for just a moment. When the U.S. came out and looked a little rough, a little ragged early on, key saves by the American goalkeeper Hope Solo. Here's one of those against Australian team player Elise Kellen-Knight.
And the Knight setting it in! Save Solo!
Solo really did save the energy in that game, the American energy, Lakin. When things looked a little rough out on the field, she kept making these unbelievable saves right there in the net.
Yeah, no, if it wasn't for her, that game would have been completely different. They may have even lost that game. The team needs her. I mean, this team isn't going anywhere in the tournament without Hope Solo. They were bombarded early, and Solo that one that she tipped and hit the crossbar, they were miraculous saves. And I think there were, like, three in the first 15 minutes. I think the U.S. knows that without her that... And again, that's one reason why they could even win the whole thing, because she's probably not allowing, more than three goals this tournament.
And here's Epi Wambach, of course. She's 34 now, so this is probably almost certainly her last World Cup appearance. But lots of balls sent her way by the U.S. team. And she's talking here with reporters in Winnipeg following that 3-1 win against Australia last Tuesday, saying that when the chips are down, they fight back. They have tantrums, said Epi Wambach.
I think that our team, we're a bunch of competitors, and when things don't go according to plan, I think that we all kind of reach into a different place inside of us that we never knew that we had. It's that tantrum, we're all throwing tantrums out there.
Lakin, can you see? I'm not sure exactly what she means, except just really let the energy rip, I guess.
Yeah, I think so. That's funny. I think that they are just so, emotional, and they will do anything to win because... you talk to them, and all they can talk about is how much they want to win this World Cup. They're so frustrated by 2011 and how close they came, and there's nothing that they want more than to win this. And you can see how on the field, they don't get chippy with each other. They just, when things aren't going their way, you can see especially Abby just kind of talking, and I guess in tantrum you can almost kind of see, like, not stomping their feet almost, but just, like, very emphatic talking to each other and just like, hey, like, do this next time, or, maybe next time, bring the ball out wide or cross it, or, like, just kind of giving instructions.
Here's defender Julie Johnston. This was talking to Fox Sports after the 0-0 draw with Sweden on Friday night, saying, yeah, the draw, but they were playing better.
I thought we played well, which is great. That was what we wanted to do. We wanted to play better than our first performance. We knew we could play better. I thought our possession was well. We switched the point of attack well. So I think it's just momentum into the next game is really what we're looking for.
So walk us through this lineup, veterans and newcomers. Who's most important to this team right now, Lakin?
Well, I would say the back line's pretty important. You've got, as far as newcomers go, Julie Johnston, like you just heard, it's her first World Cup. Megan Klingenberg, her first World Cup. You have Becky Sauerbrunn and Allie Krieger. It's not their first World Cup, but, the two, half the back line's their first, and they're playing fantastic. Then in the center, you've got, Coach Jill Ellis is kind of... mixed a little bit. Like last Sweden game, Morgan Bryan, she's the youngest player on the team, 22 years old. She started in the midfield. Obviously, her first World Cup being 22. She started with Carly Lloyd, veteran, in the middle. And then you've got at wide, Megan Rapinoe, obviously not her first World Cup by any means. And then Kristen Press, her first World Cup. And then up top, Sydney Leroux, her first World Cup. She started both games. And then Abby has started, obviously not her first. And then I think, you've got a bunch of different forwards cycling in. And, but, you know, I guess like half the lineup, it's their first tournament. So it's kind of an interesting to see how they're dealing with the pressure and dealing with the crowd and dealing with, you know, having to these do-or-die matches.
It took women a long time to get World Cup competition going. Men have been at it for many decades. The women really cranked it up in the 90s, and the U.S. so dominant then. The field expanded this time from 16 to 24 teams. I guess it's just a case of global competition rising as more and more countries put more work and resources into their women's teams.
Yeah, exactly, and that's great. I mean, the more competition, it's better for, I mean, the U.S. is noticing because, like, you've got teams like Cameroon and Thailand and Ecuador. They're all playing in their first World Cup, and it only makes the competition better. I mean, granted, like, some of these teams are, you know, getting, you know, they're facing Germany and, you know, the result's not going exactly the way that they want, but it's a great learning experience. And I mean, Japan in like their first World Cup, I can't remember exactly what year it was, but they may maybe 91. It might have been, you know, like obviously like the first time that there was ever a Women's World Cup.
Yep.
But they may have gotten, you know, beat like 10-0, and then, you know, in 2011 they win the thing. So it's one of those things where, you know, you start and it may be shaky and maybe you know, you may not have all your ducks in a row, but hey, maybe like 8 years later you may win the whole thing.
Japan took it last time. Germany's taken it twice. So has the United States of America. Their team well in it now, playing Nigeria tomorrow. Lakin Littman is covering it in Canada, hosting the FIFA World Cup for Women this year. Lakin, thank you very much for being with us from Vancouver today.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point, and we're talking this hour about U.S. women's soccer and the World Cup. The U.S. was early and dominant in Women's World Cup soccer. We're looking at where it is now and why. Of course, it is not only Americans out there by any stretch. On Saturday, Colombia got its first win in the Women's World Cup tournament against France. It was a 2-0 upset of the third-ranked team. A Colombian goal in the 90th minute clinched the win.
This is the decision right here, not to shoot. Everyone in that stadium is yelling shoot. She keeps her composure, finds the right pass.
Catalina,
Great goal.
2-0, very narrow window for her to tuck that one in.
And it went, and here, Brazil's great star, Marta, named five times by FIFA as world's best female soccer player, had a record-setting night last Tuesday, leading Brazil to a 2-0 win over South Korea. The goal came off a penalty kick in the 53rd minute.
The shot to the corner! Marta has 15 World Cup goals, more than anyone else in history, and Brazil leads 2-0.
The American team showing good spirit. They're up against Nigeria tomorrow. It's been 16 years since they won a World Cup. They won it. Here's an interview with NPR's Rachel Martin in May. Megan Rapinoe, a midfielder on the U.S. team, described the U.S. style of play.
I think traditionally we've always been very fit and fast and physical, and we have that sort of physical element that we can just outlast teams. And we have that grit and that mentality that we're never going to quit. But I think that we've added a lot of flair and creativity, and I don't think we get enough credit for how technical we are across the board.
What do you see in the U.S. women's play? We're at 800-423-8255. Allison McCann from 538 joins us in just a moment, and George Qureshi as well from Howler Magazine. Let's get a call or two here first. Kingfisher, Oklahoma. Tracy is on the line. Hi, Tracy. You're on the air. Thank you very much for calling.
Hi. I'm so glad to be talking with you, especially about women's soccer. And
all right.
We're super fans here in the Heartland, and we drove up to Winnipeg first game. And you're right, Tom, that first game was a little sluggish, but the women look like they've improved on the second match. So we're ready. We're ready to get out of the group of D and move on.
Tracy, how long is the drive from Kingfisher, Oklahoma to Winnipeg, Canada?
Oh, my goodness, Tom. It's like, I felt like it was like 17 hours. I have two kids in college, and we all took a road trip across America.
That's pretty exciting. Do you have daughters who play, or sons too, for that matter?
Son, and they've played since they've been, you know, 5 or 6 years old, and we're just super fans here in Oklahoma.
What do you think about the U.S. team and what it needs to do from what you saw in that first game? If you were the coach, when you got back in the locker room, what would you say? Here we go.
Yes. If I was the coach, I would say you need to press forward and get into the crossing position because your attack was really weak in that first match. You didn't have enough numbers. You didn't have numbers up. You had numbers down moving forward. And you need to work with the midfielder and the forwards. Both need to work together and put that ball into the box and shoot it. That's kind of where we're at. We didn't have any attack on that first game. It seemed a little real tentative, real defensive-minded game, and that's not the way to win.
Tracy, I'll give you the job, Tracy, if you're up for it. Up for a 17-hour drive from Oklahoma to Winnipeg to see that first game, two daughters playing. You're right on the money. Tracy, thank you very much for calling in today.
Thank you, Tom.
Let's get a couple of reporters in here who are all over this. Allison McCann joins us right now from New York, visual journalist at 538. It's the ESPN-owned data journalism site. Allison played on the Women's Premier Soccer League team of the California Storm, played with the Boston Breakers, played on Stanford's soccer team in college, been watching very closely. Allison McCann, thank you so much for joining us.
Hey, Tom. Thanks for having me.
And with us from Memphis, Tennessee today is George Qureshi, founder, editor of Howler Magazine, the magazine on American and international soccer. He's host of the soccer podcast Dummy, a soccer term for when a player lets the ball go past or through the legs to a teammate in order to fool an opponent. George Qureshi, thanks so much for being with us.
Hey, Tom. Hey, Allie.
Allison, what do you make of the play so far? Are they showing the stuff? Do they have it to go all the way?
I think they do. I think people are disappointed, but the nature of the group stage is you are going to play a little safer and you're going to play to not lose and not win. So, you know, I think the U.S. is in a really good spot. They're sitting at the top of their group with 4 points and playing Nigeria tomorrow. And, yeah, I think we do want to see more offense and want them to be scoring goals. But at the end of the day, this is the group stage and it's getting out of the group that matters. And once we're in the knockout, I think we'll see a much stronger, much more offensive U.S. team.
Your outfit, 538, is all about the numbers. The odds, I think this opened with you giving them a 28% chance of victory, highest second, a point above Germany at 27. Is that changing? Is that still where you put them, sort of 1-4?
No, Germany and the U.S. have flip-flopped consistently throughout this tournament. So now Germany does sit atop our rankings with a 31% chance of winning the tournament, but the U.S. is right behind them at 29%. And after today and tomorrow's games, I'm sure those will change as well.
George Qureshi, what do you see? Is this the U.S. team holding back, just playing to assure against a loss? When we get into the knockout phase, all guns blazing, we'll see that big offense that our caller from Oklahoma wants?
I don't know about that, Tom. I'm a little more pessimistic. But I have a question for Allison. What does the model say if France ends up coming in third in their group and the U.S. draws them because they win their group?
Yeah, so that matchup, France right now, they moved down to only a 6% chance of winning. I don't know the exact odds of when France and the U.S. cross, but it's interesting that big upset against Colombia now puts France almost in a better spot to not face Germany in the quarterfinals. So we'll see what happens with that.
I mean, because you know, you assume the U.S. wins its group, it's got a better chance in the knockout rounds. But as it stands now with that upset, I mean, France is one of the top teams in the world. They beat the U.S. not too long ago. And, you know, if the U.S. ends up drawing them in the knockout rounds because they came in first and France came in third, that would be a huge surprise, I think, and something that the U.S. probably isn't prepared for.
George, if you had to describe the American team's style of play, how would you describe it?
You know, I think Megan Rapinoe was pretty much, she was on point. She fast, physical. You know, what I see, and I think what Tracy was talking about, is a somewhat disjointed teamwork when they come into the attack. I mean, I've been kind of shocked at how sort of absent the midfield has been.
We've heard a lot of people sort of just trying to boot it over the midfield and get it down to Abby Wambach and just go.
Yeah, or coming through the left. I mean, against Sweden, the play came pretty much solely through the left side to Megan Rapinoe's side, and she's been amazing. But you know, if you can isolate Megan Rapinoe in the midfield, then you're really causing the U.S. some problems.
Allison, could you do a tight analysis for us of that save of Megan Rapinoe's, heading the ball right off of the goalpost, basically there. She's 5'2". How do you get that kind of altitude and precision? I mean, they had to bring in the tight technology to figure out if it was over the line in the goal or not.
Yeah, that was Megan Klingenberg, actually. And
I'm sorry. Yeah, yes.
She was incredible. She, was in the perfect position on that backside of hope, which is exactly why you put those players there on the post. Mm-hmm. And, she was phenomenal. Just, I don't even think that you think about that. You just react because you're so trained to do that.
Just go up and do it. Jennifer's calling from Nashville, Tennessee. Hi, Jennifer. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi. What do you think?
Well, I was thinking that the U.S. can still make it to the final, although 4 years ago was a heartbreaker. This year's not going to be easy, being that the teams had had 4 more years to prepare and advance their game. So I just believe that the coach, Jill, should be using more of the veterans that she has on the bench.
Use more of the veterans. That's interesting. I mean, people have said, Abby Wambach, of course, the foremost among those veterans. George, has been talked that Abby doesn't have the gas to make it all the way through the game these days at 34. Jennifer wants more veterans in the game. Where do you see the balance of talent here, capacity?
Well, they've been conserving Abby Wambach's time, you know, because of her age, because of the artificial turf, you know, and the wear and tear that that provides. I would say that one of the criticisms of Jill Ellis's coaching has been that maybe she hasn't bringing in enough young players. But you look at Julie Johnston, for instance, who is playing, she's one of the freshest players on the team. She, just out of college, she's playing center back and doing incredibly well. So I Kristen Press is another one who's sort of a new player. I know Allison is very high on, and these young players, I think, very talented and are proving that they belong out there.
Allison, what about younger versus older players on this team and where their best shots lie?
Yeah, I'm with George. I want to see more. I like that Morgan Bryan got the start on Friday. She's been great. But I would like to see her more in a central midfield role and allowing Holiday and Carly Lloyd to get in with the attack. I think it would be great to break out of this 4-4-2, which the U.S. is so used to and is more defensive-minded. And I think it would be great to sort of mix up the midfield and allow Holiday and Lloyd to join in the attack. They've been this tournament far less efficient than they were in 2011. Lauren Holiday had actually led the World Cup with this chances created per game, which is like a pass that leads to a goal.
Sure.
And now in these first two games, she's only had about three of those. And so, yeah, I think the midfield is really where we need to get those players going and involved with our forwards.
Let's go to Ed in Toronto, Canada. Ed, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Okay. Thank you, and I'm interested in the significance of the artificial turf factor so far in the games that have been played so far. One little note here, that after the FIFA World Cup for women, there's going to be the Pan American Games in Toronto and nearby Hamilton, Ontario, where artificial turf will be on the new stadium in Hamilton, Ontario. I wonder what the factor is. We've heard that a Fox sports reporter measured the temperature at 120 degrees down at stadium, you know, at the turf level, and the air level was around 73, 74 degrees.
I don't know about temperature, but there's been all kinds of complaint in advance of this World Cup series. Top players coming out from around the world, certainly Americans, saying we don't want to play on artificial turf. They wanted to sod it over and get some grass in there. Here was Abby Wambach, U.S. forward, saying players were disadvantaged and maybe hurt with the artificial turf.
Playing on turf affects everything, you know, it affects the way the ball rolls, it affects the way the ball bounces, it affects the way you think about whether or not going into a slide, slide tackle, should I slide and toe poke this ball into the goal and deal with bloody knees, bloody hip bones. It's kind of a nightmare.
And doesn't get better when you're 34. On Saturday, Wambach commented off tape to reporters that her missed headers in the Australia game might have become goals if they'd been playing on a grass field. George, I don't see the men's World Cup playing on artificial turf. Why the difference?
I was going to say, Tom, is aside from aesthetic differences, there's the discriminatory aspect of this. I mean, the FIFA doesn't expect men to play on it. They shouldn't force the best women players in the world to play on it either. It's kind of ridiculous.
Is it a money deal? Is it more expensive to keep the grass up? Or what's the situation?
That's a good question. FIFA is not exactly the most transparent organization,
so we heard recently.
They have been creeping toward more artificial turf. They do it in youth tournaments. Even some of the best club teams in the world are now playing on hybrid surfaces of natural grass and artificial turf. And I wouldn't be surprised, FIFA often uses these, what they consider, less important tournaments than the Men's World Cup to sort of test out things. So I wouldn't be surprised if they actually made a move to this sometime in the future. But at the same time, the uproar, I think, would be even greater than it has been for the women who, it should be noted, filed a lawsuit against FIFA and the Canadian, Soccer Association back in November. They dropped it in January, but it was so serious that they actually spoke out against it in court.
Allison, what about the way FIFA provides for the great women players of the world? Do you see discriminatory treatment here?
Absolutely. I mean, I think FIFA has made it very clear that they don't care about the women's game from playing on turf, from federations only having to give, I think, 15% of their annual financial assistance program to, increasing women's football development. I think that, it's just absolute neglect and it's really unfortunate.
They don't care because the audience isn't there. I mean, I'm looking here, Fox saying that the match, this is U.S. against Sweden, was the most watched soccer game ever broadcast by Fox, now others, of course, and the most watched Women's World Cup group stage match ever. I guess still the numbers are substantially lower than men's. Is that why FIFA turns away a bit?
Yeah, I think that they take this into account and just probably don't put the Men's World Cup and the Women's World Cup on the same level. So that's their decision, but it's clear that the rest of the world is starting to feel differently, especially in the U.S.
Audience has been growing very substantially. Drew in Peacedale, Rhode Island. Drew, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I just wanted to make a comment that we're a lifelong soccer family, and we love watching women's soccer because they get right up whenever they fall or they have a clash of heads. They don't do the theatrical embellishment that's so common in men's soccer.
All the grimacing and rolling around, writhing in agony on the grass,
really
just not there.
It's hard to watch.
Yeah. And what about, did you ever see Allison McCann play, Drew?
We did. As a family, we went up to watch the Boston Breakers at a home game where 15-year New England Revolution season ticket holders, and we used to go to the Boston Breakers, and I was just really struck for the first time seeing women's professional soccer live, and they would just get right up. There was none of the theatrical embellishment.
and you enjoy that fact. Drew, I appreciate your call. Allison, how about it? What do you think has led the men's soccer to turn into such a kind of operatic displays of theater, and why haven't women gone to that?
Well, I don't think it's as, common in the women's game, but there definitely are players that do this. Abby, Amarta have been known to fall and sort of stay down and ask for these fouls too, but it's definitely not as widespread in the women's game, and I'm not sure why. We're just better at soccer, more, honest to the game. What do you think, George?
I don't have a theory about this, to be honest, but I have to agree. I mean, there's something really nice about watching the women play. They're really passionate, and you see there's a layer of sort of just experience with the top men that is not there, and so it's a little bit more of a raw experience watching the women, and I really enjoy that. I gotta say they seem to be really enjoying themselves on the field.
Hi, everybody. Tom here. I'm glad you're joining us for this On Point podcast. Before we get back to the show, I'd like to tell you about another podcast you might enjoy, too, Dear Sugar Radio. Join hosts Cheryl Strayed and Steve Almond as they field questions about love, sex, work, guilt, money, you name it. That's Dear Sugar Radio. You can find it at WBUR.org/Dear Sugar or subscribe on iTunes. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point, and we're talking this hour about U.S. women's soccer and the World Cup. The U.S. early and dominant in women's world soccer. We're looking at where the team stands now and why, what their odds are as they wade more deeply into the World Cup competition going on across Canada right now. The U.S. up against Nigeria tomorrow. They had a 3-1 victory over Australia, 0-0 draw with Sweden over the weekend. Nigeria tomorrow, confidence pretty high that they'll do well enough to go on, hold Nigeria off a bit. Allison McCann is with us from 538, joins us from New York today. She's following very closely, former soccer player herself. George Qureshi is with us, founder, editor of Howler magazine. They follow everything about American and international soccer. Night of the Living Refs writes to us, USA are at the top of 538. I'm afraid that's no longer true, dear listener, but as Allison just said, right next to Germany, yes, we can go all the way, even with this horrible, toxic, fake turf, but we should be happy that the competition is so tough. And then I guess that's always true. Let's get a caller. Cole in Atlanta, Georgia. Cole, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi, Cole. What do you know?
I just wanted to say that I think that the USA does an amazing job of playing from the outside in. I'm a 13-year-old, by the way, and I play soccer and I love it so much. I've been playing since I was three. So I recognize that the US does a great job of playing from the outside in and playing it to people like Graham Pohn so she can get a great cross in to people like Cindy LaRue and Abby Wambach because they're just both magnificent at heading stuff. But also, I'm a Nigerian-American, so I just wanted to tell everyone not to count out Nigeria so quickly because I feel like Nigeria with Oshoala up front can do a great job of penetrating the defense, even with people like great defenders like Julie Johnston.
Yeah, Cole, you are some kind of analyst. George or Allison, hire this guy maybe when he gets through his soccer time. What about it? Look at this Nigerian matchup. Cole says Oshoala is almost unstoppable for Nigeria, even up against Julie Johnston and the rest. What do you say, Allison?
I think Cole is spot on. I think Nigeria was incredible in their first game against Sweden with so much pace up top, like he said. They struggled a bit against Australia, but I think the U.S. defense is definitely going to be put to the test against Nigeria tomorrow. They have a ton of speed, and it will be interesting to see how the defense handles that. I don't think they've played a team this quick yet.
Cole, while we've got you, when you play soccer, do you always play against boys only, or do you play against girls as well?
I play against boys only, but I have different cousins and stuff who play soccer, and I recognize the way they play, and I look at people, like, for the Women's World Cup and see that they play, like, a very good, like, physical yet still, like, kind of classy game with different nice passes and stuff like that.
And what about the popularity of soccer in the U.S. versus Nigeria? You're Nigerian-America. Where's there more enthusiasm, the U.S. or Nigeria, Cole?
I mean, Nigeria, we're always down to play a great game of soccer and to watch it, certainly. You can see by looking at the stands that the USA game in Canada, we're always playing trumpets and happy and such. So we're definitely always down to watch a great game. So as a result, there's a big viewing of U.S. Soccer and basically any type of soccer in Nigeria. So, yeah.
Cole, you're a terrific observer. I bet you're a pretty darn good player as well. Come back anytime and comment on soccer for us right here. Great to have you from Atlanta, Cole.
Awesome. Thank you.
Thank you. Barbara in Akron, Ohio. Barbara, you're on.
Oh, wonderful. I just wanted to talk about the style of play that differentiates the men from the women.
Please.
I'll say it slowly so that it sinks in.
Mm-hmm.
Women play to win, whereas men play not to lose. Which means when the women play, the game is more end-to-end, which makes it more exciting. If men get ahead by one goal, they tend to kind of lay back and just try not to let the other opponent score. And because of that style of play, FIFA actually had to change the laws of the game, making it your own player is not allowed to pass it back to their keeper and have the keeper handle the ball to waste time.
Mm-hmm.
And what the other thing I found interesting is that FIFA thought that women's soccer was so unimportant, they were going to lower the standards for female referees because they didn't think it was that tough of a game. Whereas, in fact, because the game is more end-to-end, they have to be in better shape to referee a women's game.
Barbara, let me put your thesis to our panel here. George, let me come first to you. Women play to win when it comes to soccer. Men play not to lose. Do you see that? Do you agree, George? Does it play out in the style of play?
This may be a little too wonky for your audience, Tom, but I generally try to avoid making broad statements like that, especially since, you know, my audience with the magazine is a little, you know, they would crucify me for saying something so, you know, like that. But I would say that
I see a note here that Barbara's played and ref for 30 years, so she's got a little refinement in her view as well. Perhaps she's just bolder than you, George.
That may be because she's a woman. She's playing to win here on the radio. I think that let's take this back to the Nigeria game. Sure. I think you're going to see two teams that really their biggest strengths are speed and you know, physical sort of just ability. And so you are going to see two teams that are just sort of going at each other end to end, you know, perhaps bypassing the midfield, which the U.S. has been trying to do, you know, in its first two games. And I'll point out that, you know, in the five, talking about all World Cups now, in the five matches that the U.S. women's team has been fouled the most, mm-hmm. three of those matches have come against Nigeria. So you're going to see a Nigeria team, I expect, that is coming out to really play physically. And if the U.S. strategy so far has been to outlast its opponents and sort of try to grab a win toward the end, that may be a problem against a Nigeria team that's sort of able to go toe-to-toe with them.
Real job for the refs maybe on Tuesday. Allison, what about Barbara's broad strokes here? Women play to win. Men play not to lose.
Yeah, that's sort of the anti-538, too. We try to avoid those sort of huge generalizations.
Oh, I got the pros here. Great.
That would fill in nicely on our podcast, which is called Hot Takedown, where we sort of try to analyze these hot takes. So maybe we can take a look at Barbara's question in more depth and see if there's any validity to that.
Let's hear from another. Barbara, thank you so much. In Akron, Jerry in Virginia Beach. Jerry, you're on.
Thank you for taking my call.
Yes.
I just want to let you ladies know that, I mean, I really, really enjoy watching them play. They're in your face. They cover the fields. It's amazing. I'm new to watching soccer. I've always watched football or other sports, but I don't understand all the rules, but just watching them out there and they're giving it all, it's wonderful. It's good to see them out there.
Jerry, I appreciate your call. Allison, George mentioned physicality likely to show up in the Nigerian game. What about physicality, men's versus women's soccer at this level?
I don't like to keep doing this. Let's compare the men's game to the women's game because I think they are different styles. But I think the women play just as physical against women, and men play physical against men. So I don't know. I don't think it's worth looking at one versus the other. It's enjoyable to watch both. They are different styles of soccer. You'll see less flopping maybe in women's and men's, like we talked about before. But for the most part, it is soccer, and they play the same game. So I don't know. I don't want to keep doing this, like, how does the women's and the men's look differently? You should watch them both and enjoy them both.
We're all for that. George, what about within the FIFA competition here on the U.S. team's style of play? How does the physicality of the Americans compare with that of their rising competition from all over the world?
Well, I mean, you know, you can talk about that, and it's certainly true that the you know, with players like Abby Wambach, who's so dominant, especially in the air, Allison actually wrote much of our summer 2015 World Cup, Women's World Cup preview for this new issue, and pointed out that Abby Wambach has scored more goals than any, you know, any player, men's or women's, internationally, and many of those come with her head. So she is super dominant in the air, in the box, with those crosses coming from Megan Rapinoe. But you have to point out that on the other end of the spectrum, players like Rapinoe are extremely skillful. You know, there have been some beautiful moments of just incredible touches and skill and awareness and vision in this World Cup. And so, you know, I definitely would not want listeners to come away with the idea that, you know, these women's teams are just sort of bashing the ball forward and running after it. You know, there was a beautiful free kick in Norway versus Germany. A woman named Maren Mjelde scored just an absolutely exquisite free kick. Just you know, that any man in the world would be really, really proud to have scored. So, you know, I think the physicality is there. The skill is there. It's, you know, women's soccer is not some pale facsimile of men's soccer. It's it's a really, really arresting sport. And I'm really glad that your caller, Jerry, you know, is sort of turned on to it. I mean, for an American football fan to come to soccer, especially women's soccer, you know, based on your assumptions about it, perhaps, and really find something to latch onto is really heartening for all soccer fans, I think.
We've got Heno saying, my favorite goal of the World Cup competition so far by Mexico's Monica Gonzalez against Colombia. She hit a corner kick, curled it right into the goal. Awesome. That is pretty awesome. That's pretty amazing. Mm-hmm. Danny in New Orleans, you're on the air, Danny.
Hola, Tom.
Hola. Hola. Very well. What do you see, Danny?
Well, I wanted to say something about Hope Solo, which is my favorite, you know, player by far. And I'm so glad that the off the field, you know, trouble that she had in the past hasn't affected her her skills and her style of play. And I really enjoy watching them, and I believe that U.S., you know, is going to go all the way.
U.S. goes all the way. Hope Solo, your favorite team, and doesn't deserve her trouble for the off-field. Let's hope they go all the way. I'm with you on that, Danny. Can we look at Hope Solo for a minute? She was amazing, is amazing again and again and again. I mean, nobody questions it on the field. She's had some trouble off the field this night last night where there were domestic violence case with her half-sister and her nephew. She said she was the one who was injured. The prosecutor says, no, she was the aggressor here. There's been a lot of chatter about that. I don't know where that stands at this point. It came up when the Swedish coach, who formerly worked with the American team, this is Pia Sundhage, talking with reporters on Friday, tried to clarify some of her earlier remarks about the current U.S. team where she'd sort of been bad-mouthing them. Here's the once American and now Swedish coach.
When it comes to Hope Solo, she's a piece of work. And that's good as well, because it's things happens around her. And as somebody told that, she something happens outside the field, but when it comes to 2x45 minutes, she is the best goalkeeper in the world. So why wouldn't you try to make her happy? And at the same time, have a team spirit. And it's a little bumpy road.
Things happen around her, but she's the best goalkeeper in the world. Allison, here's a comment on Facebook from Matt, said that this situation with Hope Solo, whose play is inarguably fantastic, but so far, she's not really in hot water for this off-field stuff. Matt says seems to highlight the bias between the national outrage over the NFL and domestic violence, but Solo gets a free pass. What do you say to that, Allison?
Yeah, I think a lot of U.S. fans have been grappling with this. I have as well, wanting to support the U.S. and the team despite all these allegations against Hope and what she's done, you know, is really awful. But I also don't think the comparison between women's soccer and the NFL is a straight line. And I don't think we can look at Hope Solo's case and Ray Rice's case or the NFL as a whole and sort of say that they should be treated the same. But I also don't think Hope Solo's case should be ignored as well. And I'm glad all of this stuff is coming to the forefront at a time when people are really paying attention to women's soccer.
She's tough. I mean, we pull this stuff out on the men. I guess we should hear, too. But she told the police that she could whoop them if she wanted to. She told them her necklace was worth more than they make in a year. But on the field, she's pretty much unparalleled there in the goal. Samantha in Albany, New York. Samantha, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
That's exciting. It's actually funny you're just talking about even treatment, because that was, you guys were talking before about why the women, by and large, don't engage in theatrics like the men do.
Mm-hmm.
And I was saying I haven't been a soccer player for a long time, but I am a woman working in a men's field, and my two theories on why they don't engage that way is, A, because I don't think they're going to squander the opportunity. I think probably women have had to work a lot harder professionally, sports, collegiate sports,
yep,
that they're not going to squander that. Number two, I don't think they can because of just stereotypes. You know, the moment they do that, someone can say, oh, look, the women are being women. You can look at politics as well. It's the same sort of thing. So you sort of have to be a little tougher. You have to be a little more good at your job, straightforward, do your thing. And that's my theory.
Samantha, you got it. You got a big view there. Take the metaphor right off the field. The women just have to be a little tougher. The men can flop all over and do. No question about it. I appreciate your call, Samantha. Allison, what's it going to take? If you project out from what we've seen of American play so far, look on through the rest of this World Cup series, let's say that they do what's necessary with Nigeria to go on. What are they going to have to show that they haven't so far?
I think they're going to have to be a lot more creative. I think the Megan Rapinoe clip that you played is absolutely spot on. We're the fittest, fastest, most athletic team, but that's not proving to be enough in this World Cup. The other teams are also fit and fast and athletic, so we need to get a little bit more creative on the ball and sliding people in and a little more possession-style play and not just to this direct long ball and hope we get moments of brilliance from one player. It needs to come from combining with a lot of players is what I think we're going to have to do.
George, does that mean that the early American World Cup victories that we so celebrated were there because, simply because we were out front and had more experience? Is that golden day behind us?
I would say it's certainly it helped that we were one of the top teams when the field was a lot thinner. Now there are a lot, you know, much better teams. I just want to also stand up for Hope Solo real quick, Dom. She's
sure.
an amazing athlete. And you know what? We celebrate darkness in male athletes and complicated lives. And I just want to say that, you know, she's great. I really enjoy her.
I think everybody's there celebrating Hope Solo on the field. We've all just seen in the last year in the NFL in particular, male athletes take a lot of grief as well off the field. Interesting, just interesting how all of these filter into the culture. It's exciting to watch this U.S. team play. It's exciting to watch all the teams play. Good luck to the whole field here. George Qureshi with Howler Magazine in Memphis today. Thanks for joining us, George.
Thanks, Tom.
And Allison McCann at 538 in New York City. Allison, thank you for being here.
Thanks for having me, Tom.
Listeners, enjoy the World Cup. Enjoy the women's team. Thanks for being here today. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.